The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show here on your number one local radio station. It is Highland Radio. It's 4 minutes past nine, Thursday the 13th of August. Lots coming up. We'll bring you the latest on that development of a Barnesmore Greenway. Maybe you'll want to have a view in relation to that. And so much more besides. We're going to be launching the Highland Radio Customer Services Awards a little later on, which is very exciting. And Chris will be around for business news. That and so much more besides. Listening to Donal talking there of the Clacton by-election. And you have to say, Count Binface, he is a bit of a breath of fresh air. He was on American TV and they were looking for his what makes him who he is. This is what he had to say to them. Let me see if I can get this on for you here now, because it is, I thought it was quite funny.
On the political spectrum.
So the lady's asking him a little bit about his political nuances.
Where would that fall on the political spectrum?
Well, I am the galactic center. And everything else just revolves around me like little planets.
Could you put that in, like, American political terms?
Yes. I'm the galactic center, and everything else spins around me like little planets.
That's the way politics should be, shouldn't it? Much more fun and not taking yourself too seriously. Let's look at the newspapers today. The Tyrconnell Tribune focuses on the ongoing issues with traffic in Letterkenny. I mean, we'd cover it. It comes in waves. We have really bad days and then days that aren't so bad. But the bad days are bad. And I read from John McAtee here that the disaster that is the Letterkenny traffic gridlock has gradually worsened in the past year to its most serious point this month. An urgent action is being demanded by a number of councillors, particularly in Fianna Fáil. Councillor Kieran Brogan, the Fianna Fáil whip on the council, said that active travel projects have seriously damaged the council brand, and he's calling for the chief executive, John McLaughlin, to intervene directly in calling a halt to the current projects until such a time as normality is restored. And John references this show. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio has been buzzing about the gridlock. Highland gives an immediate voice to the people and the local community. That's what it does best and is a vital part of the communications process. But official Ireland must be seen to respond and answer questions from the public. Nice words, actually, John. I do appreciate that. I didn't realise they were there till I got further down into the article. So Donegal County Council has announced the publication of the Planning Application Environmental Impact Assessment Report and compulsory purchase order for the proposed Barnesmore Gap Greenway. And I'm taking this from the Donegal News. The council say the publication of the application marks a significant milestone in the development of one of Donegal's most ambitious active travel and tourism projects. I want to go through that on the old train line, but you know what? If it's going to be a greenway, it'll be a greenway. Omelettes and eggs, you know yourself. We'll find out from the council what exactly is proposed, what impact it might have, the compulsory purchase order process, and so on and so forth. So if you have any interest in that at all, you'll want to stay tuned. The Derry News this morning, bonfire materials removed from Bogside site. Bonfire materials have been removed from a site in Derry. The materials were removed in the early hours of Wednesday morning ahead of the annual August 15 bonfire in the Bogside, which was due to be staged on Saturday night. Police were in attendance as pallets were loaded into lorries by masked workers from under the flyover in the Leckie Road area. We were talking about car parking charges, a dramatic increase in the charges at Letterkenny University Hospital over the course of the last 4 years, 300% in fact. Now, we did hear from the opposition health spokesperson, David Cullinan, who did point out that it was from a lower base because of the COVID lockdown, but still dramatic increases. And there were calls on the Minister for Health to do something about it. But she's speaking in the papers today and has been speaking to the Irish Daily Mail, or at least her comments are reported in the Irish Daily Mail. The Health Minister said she will not intervene in the car park charges set by hospitals, as new data shows parking revenue more than doubled in 4 years. Figures from the HSE show that patients and families spent a record £17.76 million on parking at public and voluntary hospitals in 2025, compared to £7.39 million in 2021, representing a 140% increase. But we do have to factor in the traffic that would have been there at that time. The Coalition has now been accused of repeatedly breaking promises to minimise the cost of parking at public hospitals after commitments to address the issue in the past two programmes for government. And Jennifer Carroll McNeill recently told the Dáil's Public Accounts Committee she would not interfere or intervene in the issue of parking despite those commitments. So where are we? I'll just remind you, in case you weren't listening yesterday, Letterkenny University Hospital, €3 up to 4 hours, €6 for 24 hours, €15 weekly. But the revenue there has gone up dramatically. I'll be honest with you, we had lots of reactions to lots of topics yesterday. The car parking charges at Letterkenny University Hospital didn't generate dozens and dozens of text messages, so maybe there's a level of contentment out there. I'm reading this next story in relation to the jobs market. You know, there's full employment in this country statistically, right? There's a lot of long-term unemployed people, but as a percentage of the overall total, it is really quite small. And lots of people are heading on to college now, and what you study now is really quite critical as to what jobs will be there when you leave college. And tech roles, and I think this is with the advancement in AI, tech roles, the number of jobs is contracting quite significantly here in Ireland, to the point where 35,000 tech roles have been lost in the past year. And I never realised it was that much. And I suppose you do hear the announcements, but 35,000 jobs gone in the tech industry in the past year. But steady employment figures have masked the loss of 35,000 high-tech jobs over the past year, with warnings that workers losing what have been some of the best-paid roles in the economy are becoming harder to absorb elsewhere. This is in The Independent, by the way. Around 71,000 jobs were lost across services in the year to the first quarter of 2026, according to analysis from the Employment and Recruitment Federation. High-tech services accounted for half of that figure, shedding 35,000 roles, while 36,000 were lost in labour-intensive services. But the jobs are being replaced, and I wonder how many of those high-tech role jobs, the reason we're not seeing it impacting on the figures is that maybe those are people that are quite transient in where they work and came to Ireland specifically for some of those roles. And I'd be very interested to find out what percentage of those return to a home country or move to another country for a similar type job. I'm not saying we don't hire Irish in that those roles specifically, but I do think a lot of those inward workers on work permits that might work in there. We were due to speak to this guy, but he actually had to go in and to get surgery. It's a very rare story, but shark bites and death by sharks, even if one happens in Australia, it becomes news over here. There's a level of focus on those injuries and those deaths, you know, far beyond. You could have a massacre somewhere and 25 people could be slaughtered in an African country or something and you wouldn't hear anything about it, which is crazy. But you get one person who gets bit by a shark in Melbourne, although that's probably landlocked. I don't know the geography of Australia very well, or in Sydney, right? And it becomes headline news all over the world. So there is a hierarchy of lives lost and injury. And a lot of that comes down to person's interests as well. But this is closer to home because a 27-year-old man has been hospitalised after suffering a shark bite while on board a pleasure craft off the Waterford coast on Tuesday. Experienced angler Sebastian Akchim was fishing with four others about 6 kilometres from Ramhead Ardmore when a shark caught by Akchim sometime earlier lunged for him on the deck of the boat and bit his calf, causing significant injury. So it's a shark bite story, but it's a shark bite story on land. I thought, I'm not going to make it. I was trying to stay strong to not scare the other crew, Akchim said, speaking to the Irish Times yesterday from Cork's University Hospital. So it's a bit of a different angle on that story. But anyway, he was bitten by a shark. It just happened to be in the boat. And as I say, we were going to have a chat to him to see what that experience was like, but he had to go into surgery. The Farmers Journal this morning, farmers are spending north of €3 million a day supplementing livestock with fodder and feed as a result of the ongoing drought that has gripped the country. Seeing images of animals in sheds, you know, a winter scene effectively, and the fact that this is happening at the start of August is bizarre, isn't it? Grass growth has come to a standstill, forcing farmers in the east and south into full-blown winter feeding mode. The cost to farmers varies depending on the level of feeding required, but it's reaching up to $3.50 a dairy cow a day. It's quite interesting, cows. Cows would not exist if we didn't eat them. 95% of the cow population would actually naturally die out, I'm told, would actually naturally die out if we didn't farm them because of the way we've bred them. You know, dairy cows would produce more milk than the cows would need, and that would cause infection and all that type of stuff, and eventually they would die out really quite quickly. We've also bred them in such a way where they, a lot of the time they can't naturally produce calves. They can't birth them themselves, and other animals that are so muscly that they wouldn't survive either. There are a few, three or four, sort of like native cattle that would survive, three or four breeds, which represent less than 10%, much less than 10%. But it's really quite remarkable that these animals are alive only because we keep them alive to kill them to eat them, which is by the by. But I just thought it a fascinating thing that, you know, your flocks of dairy cows and a lot of the beef cattle simply wouldn't survive. They would just die out because they've been bred to the point whereby they require us to live and exist. And thousands gathered across Ireland last night to watch a rare partial solar eclipse. Dublin's Phoenix Park saw one of the largest crowds come out to experience the once-in-a-generation astronomical event. But as I said to Gooch earlier on, it does feel like we're told they're constantly once in a million, but they seem to happen, sorry, once in a lifetime, but they seem to happen every other week. But anyway, it is what it is. Hopefully you got out and enjoyed it and we don't see a rush of people heading to the opticians. Right, now that was a run through some of the stories that are making the headlines. I'm going to do a couple of comments just before I go to the first break, because yesterday we were speaking to Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, and she's part of a European group that is suggesting that we should be teaching children in preschool about consent in terms of hugging, for an example. So the idea being that they would know whether they want to be hugged or not, and granny might give them a high five instead of a hug. And lots of you texted in, and I just want to catch up on a couple of those before I go to the first break. Lots of you pushing back on this. Greg, I never heard such so much codswallop in my life. It's no wonder the world is the way it is. That's why we have to check it, because we don't end up crazy altogether, do we? I was forced as a child to hug and kiss my stepfather goodnight every night. I hated it and it terrified me going to bed. P.S. Turned out my instinct was right about him. And that is something that is completely wrong. The idea that, and I'm so sorry that you had to go through that, but the idea that the opposite of not seeking consent for a hug is a forced hug is not really what we're talking about. And as I say, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. There is nothing worse than being a child and having to show everyone affection. Mum, dad, brother, sister, granny and granddad are all fine, and aunts and uncles if you see them regularly. No point in hugging and kissing strangers even if they're family. Of course, and who would want a hug from a child that didn't want to hug you? This caller says, I hug my grandchildren every time I see them and tell them that I love them every time I see them. I feel it's very important that they hear this from. My own children are adults and I still call them last thing at night and say I love you and good night. Yeah, that makes quite a bit of sense. Preschool children talking about consent, says another listener, is absolutely shocking and ridiculous. This is why this country is in the shape it is. I can't take this conversation seriously at all, and I'm struggling to understand it. What happens if a child falls? Does this mean you can't lift them? What do you do then? Yeah, I mean, that's, again, the extremes of the argument. I understand where you're coming from, but you go and you lift them. You don't leave them lying there. But, yeah, as I say, it's a conversation that's happening at a European level and they're trying to make it happen at a national level, but there you go. So the publication of the Planning Application Environmental Impact Assessment Report and compulsory purchase order for the proposed Barnes-Moor Gap Greenway has happened. The publication of the application marks a significant milestone in the development of one of Donegal's most ambitious active travel and tourism projects. Right, let's say good morning to Brian Reid, who's Senior Executive Engineer with Donegal County Council. Good morning to you, Brian. Thank you for your time.
No problem at all. Good morning, Greg.
Right, so how significant is this publication, this batch publication?
Yeah, so it's a major milestone for us, Greg, in this project. We've been working on the project for over 4 years now, so this is a very major step for us. We've basically finished the preliminary design environmental assessment stage of the project, and now we've basically started the planning process. So we've just submitted our application to the board, like you mentioned there, and we begin now the statutory consultation period, which will start on Monday, and then the planning process will continue for from then. So a major step, a lot of work's gone in over the years there, so a major step for the project.
So has the route been decided upon at this point?
Yes.
Okay, so can you outline that for us? And I suppose we can use the road as a guide.
Yeah, no problem. So in total, there's roughly 37.5 kilometres of shared use active travel path, Greg, basically. So it's 3 to 4 metre wide tarred surface and runs between Donegal Town and the Twin Towns, Balbofay and Stranorler. There's about 60% of it, Greg, is following the old railway line between the two towns there. And then the remainder then is areas where the railway line is no longer in place there. So starts in Donegal Town, heads out past under the bypass, roughly following the line of where the old railway line used to be, heads down towards Loch Esk. There's a loop down towards Loch Esk and back there that's roughly about 5 kilometres long. And then heads out, then crosses the road, the main road shortly after Loch Esk, and then heads up then basically on the old railway line behind Biddy's through the gap, and then alongside Loch Mourne. And
so between Biddy's and Loch Mourne, for an example, is it elevated or is it sort of at road level?
Yeah, so I suppose those that drive through there fairly regularly, you probably see along the side of the mountain there, you can see the remnants of the old railway line there. So that's basically about sort of halfway up the side of the mountain there. So real potential there to be a real iconic spot for the Greenway
right,
there.
Right, so that stretch of that old rail line will be utilised there high up the mountain.
It's on the railway line there, yeah.
That's going to make it very impressive altogether. Now, in terms then of its width, 3 to 4 meters, dependent presumably on you know where you are at.
Yeah, so it's the majority of it is 3 meters wide, Greg, and then just widens out to 4 meters as we come into both towns. So coming into Donegal Town and then coming into Balbofay and Stranorler, where it's likely to be a bit heavier usage, it widens out to 4 meters. So
just
then 3 meters everywhere else.
In terms of what you were saying about Donegal Town, whilst it is a greenway to the Twin Towns, it's been designed with a 5 kilometre loop for the town, effectively, really. So that will be that will sort of feel like a standalone walk for tourists in the south of the county?
Yeah, so the way we've designed it, Greg, obviously it's 37.5 kilometres long, roughly total, and some people will like to cycle that the whole thing, the more enthusiastic cyclists say, but most people won't want to cycle that whole thing, that most people will want to come and do sort of shorter journeys. So we've tried to design the Greenway with that in mind. So we've kind of designed in certain node points along it. So Loch Esk Loop would be one of those. And then we have other access points along it then. So we've sort of 3 major trailheads along it that form the access points. One at Donegal Town, Balbofay, Stranorler, and then one at Biddy's. And then we have a trailhead then also at Loch Esk. And then we also have a connection point at Capri. So you can split it up into smaller sections, say between Donegal Town and Loch Esk, Loch Esk and Biddy's, Biddy's and Loch Mourne, Loch Mourne and Capri, and Capri and Balbofay. So you can have those sort of shorter journeys and loop journeys within it, for maybe people going out for walks in the evening or runs in the evening that don't want to do the full thing, that sort of thing.
And is this separate completely to the road? Like I'm thinking, for example, you know, McGorry's Brae there, it's been recently widened and all that type of stuff. Does it run well away from that? Like this is a separate entity altogether, right? So,
yep, it's totally segregated from the road network, Greg. So it's standalone facility, segregated from the road. So really nice and safe and comfortable for people walking and cycling, people of all abilities there. There's small sections where we might say cross the local roads where we have to get across the roads.
Yeah.
But generally it's totally segregated from the road.
And in terms of its usage for local people as well? Is that being factored in? Do you know that it could be become very popular, for instance, with schools as a nature walk? You know, that it's not necessarily just designed, you know, maybe for the tourism market or the walking market.
Absolutely, Greg. It's designed for everybody that way. And you see that in the other greenways across the country, that yes, they are a great tourism attraction and do bring people to the area, but it's also heavily used by locals and the communities that it's in. And we've really tried to design it that way, in terms of we've connected to three primary schools along the route there. So really trying to encourage the people to say cycle and walk to school where they can. We've connected to local amenities and sports facilities like the Finn Valley Centre, the Bosco Centre here in Donegal Town, things like that. So really trying to encourage that, the local usage of it as well.
In terms of compulsory purchase orders, have landowners been contacted? Have deals been struck or agreements been reached? How much of this close on 40 kilometres will be sort of subject to compulsory purchase orders, do we think, circa? Obviously, I'm not looking for a figure exact, Brian.
Yeah, so there's 124 land and property owners affected by it, Greg. So there is a large number of people affected by the scheme. It's really been central to everything we've done in developing the project so far, in terms of engaging with the general public, but also with the people directly affected with the scheme as well. And we have done a lot of work with the landowners there in terms of the design and speaking to them. And where we've gotten feedback from people, we've tried our best to incorporate that into the design. And we have changed the design significantly based on the feedback we've got from people. In terms of purchasing the land, there's a code of practice there for greenways in terms of developing greenway projects and purchasing land. And in that, it encourages us to purchase the land through voluntary acquisition. And that is what we're doing, that our preference is to buy all the land voluntarily. And we have been engaging with the landowners on that over the last 6 to 9 months. We will have a CPO as well as that in the background. It's just the nature of sort of linear infrastructure like this. You do need a CPO. You do get a lot of instances where you have, say, title issues, particularly, say, where you have the old railway line that it mightn't be registered. So to allow the scheme to progress, not to be held up by those things, you need the CPO in the background. But it very much is our intent to purchase all the land where we can through voluntary land acquisition.
And would we expect to have some idea of progress in that regard at this point of the process, Brian?
We're just working through just it. There's no agreements yet, but we're working on it all the time. And we've been writing to the landowners and discussing it with them over the last number of months. So it's just part of the process, and that will continue as we progress the scheme through the plan, and we'll continue with that.
And the planning process is incredibly important here and everywhere for that matter. But just to be clear, this is a project that will proceed in line, obviously, with all regulations and what have you, but this is going to proceed.
It's all just subject to the statutory process, yeah. Greg. It probably is the biggest step in of the course, project yeah. development, you know, is getting it through that planning process. With everybody that we've talked to so far and engaging with the communities, the scheme is very well supported. So we'd be very positive in getting it through that process. But we just have to go through the process now, see how that goes. If we get through that, we'd be very confident that we can get the scheme delivered then.
All right, so there you are. Councillor Patrick McGowan is Lasca Hearlock of the Lifford Stranooler Municipal District. Patrick, really quite an achievement to get this project to this point, and you know, there seems to be a bit of white smoke on it. How significant do you believe it is?
Yeah, well, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Greg. Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted. People have been talking about the railway line between Belfast and Donegal Town for many, many years about the different uses of it. So way back in 2000 and during the COVID there, around that time, DLEC got funding for this innovative thinking. It's a kind of a scheme where groups come together. And the one that came up then for this area was Heartland to the Coast. So basically here in Ballon Buffet, we have a group called Basic. So we contacted people there, Sinead McGowan, people in Donegal Town, to form a group as well. And we come together. Anyway, long story short, we didn't have a plan. It was connecting a corridor, a recreational corridor. So out of that, we had a public consultation within the Diamond in Donegal Town twice, I think it was, during the summer, and the same in Ballon Buffet. But I would say 80-90% of the respondents did say, talked about a greenway, a walkway, a site, basically the old rail line, to use that. Now, there was other ideas. So from that, we have been using that information and that survey and that work that we done. We spent about 2 years during COVID, every Tuesday night for about 2 hours on the computer going through this. As I say, there was no set idea, but this is what jumped out. And as I say, look, people have been suggesting this come back for centuries. But we have then started to lobby the council and everybody else. And look, today where we are now with Brian and his team, we're absolutely delighted, because we have always said, this actually connects the centre of Donegal to the Wild Atlantic Way. We're not connected. We don't get a lot of the benefits. So we see this from a tourism, recreational, from a lot of ways. And Brian's outlined all the different centres, like the Roadhouse Bar, Village of Barnes, the massive trailheads that's going to be built here between the swimming pool and the base there in Stranraer. Massive trailhead with changing places, cycle, parking, all that, and the same then and Laisk, and the same then Donegal Town. So we see this a major boost for this area.
What about those who, you know, would have still had or have aspirations of a rail link between, you know, Letterkenny through the Twin Towns down to Sligo, you know, via Donegal Town, etc., that wants this old rail line? That being said, I think the answer to this, I think if we ever construct a rail line, it's never going halfway up the mountain again. But anyway, but just to answer those people with those concerns, that is this the death knell for any ambitions for a rail link?
I would say definitely not.
Sorry, Brian, did you want to commit? Sorry, Patrick, but just from the planning perspective.
Brian. So the short answer to that, Greg, would be 100%. The Greenway would not stop any rail infrastructure being developed between Donegal Town and Balbafay. You made the point there that the old railway line, it's a narrow gauge rail line, and it's not suitable for.
I mean, if a rail line were ever to go on to run, it's probably going to be between the mountain and the road in that space, left to right as you head towards the Old Town. I would imagine
for a rail line to happen, it would have to go through a very robust options assessment process and stuff, which would look at all that. But if you look at the railway line itself there, it's just not suitable in terms of modern rail with the structures that are there, the width of it, that, like you say, it's on a mountain.
What is up on
that
elsewhere,
the railway line is gone.
Have you been up on the old railway line, Brian, up there?
Yeah. We've walked the full thing. Is
everything lifted? Like, what is the surface up there? This is actually nothing to do with what we're talking about. It's my curiosity, because I have considered it a number of times but never quite got out of the car. What is currently up there? Was everything lifted? The sleepers, the track, everything?
Yeah, pretty much any of the track materials and things like that is lifted, and what's left is sort of the embankment itself. And it's, a lot of it is in really good shape where it's still there. Some of it is removed, say, between Biddy's and Donegal Town. A lot of it's cut off by the road and things like that. But from Biddy's to Balbafay, it is still in very good shape. And there's a lot of old stone masonry arch structures there that are, they're perfect for, say, a greenway, for a cycle track.
It'll be
suitable for anything else. But right, they're beautiful structures and still in really good shape from that
Patrick,
point of
view. I think as well, yeah. When we done our consultation, as I say, over 2 years during COVID, We had two consultations with Andy Diamond, Donegal Town, and yes, some people did say, why not bring back the rail? But like something like 80% came back and said, look, 80-85%, I can't remember now, it was very high, did say a green.
Yeah, but the question was very purposeful. I think we have to have an honest conversation that a modern train was never going to go halfway up that mountain again into the future. So
no.
This has to be utilised one way or another. In terms of progress, Patrick, you know, nothing to start before 2028, it's suspected, but there's a train in motion, no pun intended. And, you know, I think most people, if they started seeing some work 28, 29, would think this is a project moving quite quickly. If, you know, there is a process to be gone through.
Absolutely, and I think this is one of the most exciting greenway projects within the country and definitely in the county. Brian would be aware there's quite a few other projects been looked at about throughout the county. There's quite a few challenges, and I don't want to get into them details because they're at early development, but this one has looked very favourable, and that's notwithstanding people's rights to make proposals and changes to Brian's team and that, but it's something a lot of people within the community, particularly in East Donegal, going out to Barnes, would love to see it. It's sitting there, it's like an open goal, and I would love, now that the funding is there and there's a lot of goodwill towards these active travels. But as I say, it's not just about cycle lanes. This is not like the cycle lanes along a motorway and road where a lot of controversy, people giving out or what's going on later.
I was really enjoying the conversation until you started bringing the words active travel into it. Can we not just have a nice little greenway? All right, let's just park that for a second, please.
Yes,
you're you're S-stirring for the poor people in Letterkenny, Patrick.
As a matter of fact, I very much support my colleagues, Cian Brogan and them.
Of course you do. You're on the right side of history there.
We voted in this in the aura, but what I would say is...
You hit the jackpot there.
Yeah, well, this is completely different type of a project. It's way off roads. It's all local and tourism and recreational. It's
okay. Brian, just finally, you know, say, for instance, there's a disputed title, or I believe I have some say in a bit of land up there or whatever. Is it up to me to prove ownership? Because obviously then there's going to be some money involved, right? Or potentially opposition involved. Is it up to landowners to get that paperwork in order?
Yeah, so it's up to the landowners to prove title for the acquisition of the land there. Obviously, we're there to help and advise in any way we can and help people through that process. But there is a process there to do that. You know.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and listen, at this point, I'm not directly affected, so it all feels good news to me. But as I say, the nature of these things, I'll get more of an understanding as calls and stuff comes in. But I suspect that this is going to be one of the best greenways, certainly in parts in the country.
I would agree with that, Greg. And in terms of as we develop these projects, we've gone out to a lot of the other greenways around the country, the likes of Limerick and the Waterford Greenway, and they're all fantastic facilities. But we see this greenway in particular as potential to be as good, if not better, than a lot of those. And one of the big things it has going for it is the natural landscape and the amount of different types of landscapes across the length of it. So like you could be going along the greenway here and you're say going through a forest 1 minute, then you're alongside the lake the next minute, on the side of a mountain. Yeah. And that's one of the huge pluses and benefits of it.
I don't know who's responsible for this side of it, but I really hope that it's linked to the rail. We maximise, if you know what I mean, that this is about, you know, the history of the rail line and that being the theme of it, because it's you know, we're potentially able to follow the tracks of our ancestors, and you know,
there's a great history actually in Barnesmore Gap. Part of that design thinking concept that we were doing, like those suggestions that time of zip lines across the gap, there was no perceived idea at the time. Everything was on the table, but one thing came out was, you see the diversity, the wildlife, fauna, and as well, see the history where the highwaymen used to stop people going from one end of the country to another. The amount of history and stuff is there, like, so hopefully all of that can be all developed and the place like the Roadhouse.
Because
Barry,
that's what people coming want. They want to feel the culture and the history and what have you. Right. Okay, let's see what the listeners think. Councillor Patrick McGowan, thank you. I know you've put a lot of work into this as well as the local rep, as many have, but thank you for your time. And Brian, listen, thank you for coming on and explaining it all to us. Is there anything you need to tell us about dates or anything, just to wrap up sort of more the business side of things?
Yes, I suppose just to make people aware that the notices for the scheme are published in the papers today, and the statutory consultation period now starts on Monday and runs for 6 weeks. So that finishes on the 30th of September. So any submissions in terms of the scheme are sent to the and Commission Planola, and they'll then assess all of those and proceed from there. So anybody that wishes to make a submission on the scheme, so do so in that period to the Commission. And I was also encouraging, like, anybody that has any comments to make on the scheme to do so, and particularly if anybody's supportive of the scheme to make a positive submission as well.
This is the time as the project is formed and starts to take shape. All views incredibly important.
Quite right.
Thank you very much indeed. Look after yourself. That's Brian there. Brian Reid, who's Senior Executive Engineer with Donegal County Council, and before him, Councillor Patrick McGowan. What do you think? As I say, you know, I'm conscious that this might be a disaster for some people. I don't know. And I'm looking at this with rose-tinted glasses, because the idea of being able to walk or cycle where the trains used to run, for me, it feels very romantic and exciting. But I do understand as well that maybe there are people listening ready to chuck the radio or the smart speaker out the window because they feel I'm not getting the point. So that's why we have this beautiful open forum that we have, 086 60 25,000. I'm joined on the program now by Nisa McGrattan, an English tutor. Good morning to you, Nisa.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Apologies for the camera angle. My cable is short, but the listeners aren't seeing what you're seeing, so that's okay. Okay. We're talking about some of the behaviours you've noticed as an English teacher working with children every day. And the behavioural side of things, has that always interested you, or is it just part of the job and it's inevitable?
No, actually, it's always interested me, you know, because I went to university to study psychology and counselling for children. So it's always been on my mind, you know. And now, as you say, I get to see it day in and day out, and it is a real eye opener.
Yes. So what are some of the observations? And you work with younger children, is that correct, Nisa?
Actually, it's a bit of a range there, because I'm a private home tutor for English. I work with kids as young as 6 all the way up to 16.
So you're there and obviously you're trying to impart your knowledge onto them, set them up for work, set them up for life, set them up for interaction with other humans. So the modern child, what are some of your key observations?
Honestly, recently all I'm seeing is a severe lack of creativity. I think that would be the main worrying observation that I have right now. And if I give you one example, it would be whenever I ask the children to come up with any sort of creative story, or, for example, you know, draw your own monster, do any of these little tasks, their first question is always, can I see an example? Can I see an example? You know, can we ask ChatGPT? And I'm always thinking, like, you know, could you not just think it up in your mind and draw something fun? And when I try and make them feel relaxed and I tell them, listen, this isn't a test, you know, just go by what's in your mind, anything fun, you know, it's meant to be a fun activity. And they genuinely start to stress out if they don't, you know, have an example. And it's quite, I don't know, it's quite mind-boggling.
So, Nisa, just in relation to that, though, can you sort of educate them into using their imaginations a little bit? Or is this native technology to them, AI, Google? Is it fundamentally changing the wiring on their brain? I'm just curious as if, you know, you see a huge change in their imagination over the course of a term, or can you not push back this tide?
I do. You know what? Of course, I would say as a teacher, we all definitely try and push back and try and open their minds. But it's just quite worrying because some of them get very, very stressed out when they cannot use these tools, you know, and then they shut down completely. Whereas, you know, some children, when you push them, it's OK. We will get somewhere. But some of them are absolutely lost without the tools. And that is quite worrying. You know, as much as we try and bring out the creativity in them, it's just a lot of them really do. They shut down and they panic when they don't have access to such tools, even for, as I say, fun activities.
So, you know, obviously that is problematic, and this is an influence of the modern world we live in. So then, say, for instance, you know, I think a lot of young girls and boys have a Temu basket or whatever, you know, and they're ultra conscious of that far more than I ever would have been. Does that come through in the classroom, that sort of consumerism, that knowledge of that side of the world?
Oh, absolutely. I would say now the consumerism is wild, and especially for, you know, adult. It's not even just toys, you see. It's, you know, products from, for example, Sephora or even, you know, Stanley cups and things like this. It's the objects that older, maybe young adults, you know, and above would want. It's the children are seeing these things, and it even comes out in the classroom, and they try and bring so many more objects into the classroom. And a lot of it actually is products. If I talk about, you know, younger girls for a moment here, it's just a lot of, it's what we call skincare. And some of it's even anti-aging and has really strong acids and everything in it. And it's it's just really worrying. And I just, in general, they just, I feel like they want much more, because it's what they're seeing online, isn't it?
What is their, what are they seeing then? Well, exactly, you're getting into it with influencers then. What about their self-awareness and appearance then? So if you've got eight-year-old girls, and we'll talk about boys and some of the trends, but if you've got eight-year-old girls who are looking for expensive skin care, Stanley cups, which are effectively an accessory at this point, really, aren't there? Aren't they? Yeah. So does that go beyond then, sort of, you know, in terms of how they look, how they present themselves? Are they over mature in that regard, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. For me, I would go as far as to say, you know, something, oh my goodness, it's just, it's so crazy to even think about right now, because they are just so obsessed with how they do appear.
What about weight?
Say it again, sorry?
What about weight, their weight?
Oh gosh, absolutely. I've been hearing the word calories being thrown around by such young children. And I look back to think of myself, or even, you know, a few years ago, and I didn't even know what a calorie was. And it's between that, between worrying about how they look with calories in anything as far as a cereal bar, it's wanting, you know, even with young boys, it's wanting, you know, blonde highlights or perms, or as I say, the girls, obviously it would be more into the skincare. And they're very worried also about their clothes, you know, and brands of their clothes, just from such a young age. And as I was going to say earlier, I would go as far as to say we've completely lost the tween. I don't know if we all remember tween culture, but I just feel like that's absolutely lost to the wind there.
I know exactly where you're on about, where the boys and girls, and I think it was particularly girls, sort of find themselves in that no man's land between being a kid and being a teenager. Do they jump on the bouncy castle or not? Do you invite them to a five-year-old's party or not? And that seems so stupid and innocent now, but and I'm just wondering, because there's an awful lot of conversation about things like consent and the manosphere as well, right? So I'm just really curious if you've any observations, and you're a teacher here, no skin in the game other than what you see. What are you seeing in young boys? Are you seeing any of that toxic masculinity trickle down, or even objectification of girls or anything like that, Nisa?
Absolutely. It is a bit worrying to see, because you really do, it does trickle down, and day to day it's aggression, I would say, towards, when I talk about young boys, it would be aggression towards young girls of their same age or in their class. And I feel as though from such a young age, they're not seeing them as equals. And it would be because they are watching these influencers on the manosphere, and they're taking this in, and it is coming out in how they even speak about their own classmates. And
did you see a comment from you that, you know, sometimes you see boys as young as 10 rating girls on sexiness?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that really is happening. And even the strangest thing is they think it's so normal that they even tell me. They'll, you know, it's a passing comment to me, their English teacher. And it's, you know, they don't seem worried that a teacher will overhear it even.
Yeah,
it, so I'm like, thinking, is it normal then for them?
I mean, obviously, these are your observations within the classroom. Is it that parents like to be best friends with the kids, and as soon as they get old enough, that's great, and treat them older than they are? Or is it unfettered access to all the influences we see on TikTok particularly, you know, where the algorithms continuously feed the young boys sexy girls in inverted commas, or women, and whereby the girls are fed, this is what you need to look like, you know, I don't know what's going on, do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I want to be really careful when I speak about parents here, because yes, maybe sometimes parents aren't monitoring what the younger people and the kids are on, you know, looking at online. But I feel sorry for parents as well, because sometimes when they really highly monitor, they don't allow them, you know, access. And then the kids will just go into school and their friends just show them, you know, their friends that maybe, you know, have access to these things or older kids, older siblings. I honestly think parents are really fighting a losing battle. It's difficult.
And I think you're right there, and that's correctly sympathetic, because I think what happens is almost every kid in the class is as mature and as exposed as the most mature and exposed kid in the class. Okay, yeah. Nisa, thanks so much for your insight. It's worrying, but it's an important observation, an important conversation. Thank you. That is Nisa McGrattan there, an English tutor who's working in Spain teaching English, and that is some of what she sees in the classroom. And as I say, she's just speaking out because these are her genuine observations. Enjoying watching Mark English and all the Irish athletes compete in the European Championship this week. So wondering how pro-Palestine campaigners feel about RTE having 45 hours daily coverage in an event where a team of Israeli athletes are allowed to compete in. Was the Eurovision Song Contest a soft target, or are the Euro Championships a more profitable broadcast selective boycott, perhaps? It's I understand exactly where you're coming from, and it's a valid point. Slightly different on the way things are, for good or bad. But yeah, okay. Due to cancellations, by the way, we now have two spaces available on our sold-out trip to Westlife's 25th anniversary tour. It's coming up, actually, next month, Friday the 18th of September. So the package includes coach transfers, an overnight stay at the four-star City North Hotel, transfer to and from the gig at the Three Arena, and standing tickets to the show, which means you'll have good vision lines for Westlife. It's €290 per person. So we just have two spaces left. So if that's something you fancy getting someone for retreat, get into us or get on to us now. 07491 25000. That trip is sold out. So it is literally just those two spots that are available. So factor in your ticket to the show, factor in your transport, factor in your hotel stay, and you'll see that it does represent good value for money in this day and age. So there you go. On the issuing of parenting, parents are the problem, Greg. None of our children have or will have phones or tablets till they're at least 14. Parents throw children a phone just to keep them occupied instead of being an actual parent. This is off the back of our conversation with Nisa before 10. She's a school teacher, and she's observed some really quite troubling behaviour. Children with a lack of sort of creativity, they actually get anxious if they're asked to think for themselves. Girls 6, 7, 8 are very conscious of their skin and their weight and their appearance. And boys, as young as 10, rating girls on sexiness and doing so right in front of the teacher. Children these days need technology. When children misbehave, they are given technology to shut them up. They shouldn't do this. That is not real life. Teachers should be taking children outside and showing them plants, flowers, etc. Children need nature. It's a scary world we live in. The mind is very absorbent of a young age. And teachers aren't there to raise our kids, though. They're there to educate them, aren't they? The internet can be highly influential, particularly for the young. They believe everything they see. That comes in from Mega Husky on YouTube. On the issue of that shark attack, well, it was a shark attack on the boat. He dragged the shark out of its natural habitat and got attacked on the boat. This caller says, if I was dragged from my natural habitat with a hook in my mouth, I'd be pretty cross. The animal should have been given respect and released. The fisherman must have been an amateur, but not in dramatics. And lots of you texting in on roadways, greenways, by the way. I'm going to get to them in a moment. But I also want to mention, I've been asked to mention, that Cockhill Sports Day in Buncrana is happening this Sunday. It's from 3 to 6. It's a fun day for all the families, so get along to that. I'm sure you'll have lots of fun. Right, on the issue of that shark as well, delighted to hear that man got bitten. He had no regard for the shark or how it feared for its life, so that's instant karma. And I like fishing, and there's part of me who's really struggled with fishing because, you know, when you take the fish out of the water, it's drowning in air, effectively, and that shark would have been drowning in air, but anyway. Right, now let's go to line one, Nicholas Crossan. Hi, Nicholas.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right, this is an experience that you and your better half, Rosemary, had. Tell us about it. It happened yesterday, right?
Yesterday morning, Greg, Rosemary's going to work as normal, and the car broke down. One of the rear wheels brake seized, so they're stuck in the middle of it. And if anybody knows the area, the Northland Road is one of two main arteries coming in from the side of Donegal into it. So it's a very, very busy road. So I contacted the AA at 9:45 yesterday morning, and I was unaware because it's the first time I ever dealt with AA. And they said it would take an hour and a half. So I thought this was a wee bit long because you're sitting in the middle of Derry City on a very busy road. But we says, okay, we'll go with that. So shortly after 11 o'clock, I contacted AA again and I started to find out a little more information on it. I'm obviously insured in Donegal, so AA Ireland had to contact AA UK. So we waited till after 11, told the next pickup time would be 12:20. Waited till 1, the next pickup time was 2:20. Waited till 3, the next pickup time was after 4. Waited till after 4, the next time was 4:30. 5 o'clock, and eventually the car got picked up at 5:30, 7 hours later.
Wow.
And I just wanted, the reason I come on, it was Rosemary had to stay with the car all day long because we were given so many different pickup times. So she couldn't leave the car. She hadn't a bottle of water. She hadn't even a cup of coffee, tea or anything. You know, it was a warm day to sit in the car. And I have to say she had great patience, better than I had. So what I was really, Greg, is if anybody breaks down in Northern Ireland, what I want them to make sure, there was a complete breakdown.
In communication, yeah.
Okay, well, between Dublin and the UK. They sent out a tow truck twice to the wrong location. My phone number was wrong. They couldn't contact anybody. In Ortland Road, they went to Clarendon Street. This is this problem was solved. These are the things that I would have been talking about. You know what? So when eventually I got through to, I made, I think, somewhere around about 10 to 12 phone calls to AA Dublin, because this is only, I tried AA UK 3 times, but with no effect. I got 3 callbacks. They were very good for me. I was talking to a different operator each time. They were very, very good. But I don't, you know this, Greg, and I'm going to say this, I don't think a Donegal Ridge gets the same attention in Derry.
Wowzers.
So it was horrendous.
In terms of sort of going to the wrong location, sending the wrong truck, that kind of internal mess up, it sounds like it just was a disaster call from beginning to end. But focusing more on the cross-border element of it, Nicholas, what have you learnt in terms of, do you ring Belfast or a British number? Do you ring Dublin? Is there anything you need to say so it's absolutely clear that you're in Northern Ireland and in inverted commas, the UK? What did you learn from that side of it?
Very, very little. I was at home for the first couple of hours, so I was on the laptop trying, then I was talking to a computer. I mean, they were talking that we only deal with UK services, so it was cut off. So went back then, I tried to dial somebody. He looked after European services. It was just a fiasco from day one. What I did learn from it is that when you get the name, when they say that they're going to pick you up, find out the name of the company. But then actually at 5 o'clock, the lorry landed, the pickup truck landed, Greg. It was a long, wrong truck. They left us because our brake was seized, so the car couldn't drive anywhere. So they had to wait another half hour and send out another truck. So there were actually 2 tow trucks at our site at 5:30 in the afternoon on the Northland Road. And I hadn't like to, you think Letterkenny was busy any day this week? You want to see the Northland Road yesterday when two tow trucks landed to pick us up. So there would seem to be a breakdown in communication because Dublin didn't know. They sent it out to Clarendon Street, which they probably looked up where Northland Road is. That Clarendon Street's a big street off it that they sent there. But we give them the address. We're sitting outside a house. We give them the postal code. We give them both our phone numbers. So there was a breakdown somewhere in communication. Yeah. So I have asked the AA. And I was on for, it must have been 3 hours, speaking to reps yesterday. And I just asked them, where did this incompetence, well, my biggest fault is I depended on somebody who does this job every single day of their life for a living, and it went completely wrong. And I know it's a small thing, a breakdown.
But they should have protocols in place for the because of the nature of the island. And I think really, as well as making sure, you know, they understand exactly what they're doing and following their protocols, their internal protocols, which I'm sure they have. The other thing that we've learned, that you and I, either you or I, or both of us combined, would not have Rosemary's patience, because we would have been back in Inishowen about 25 minutes later, and we'd have been asked, where's the car? And I would have said, I've forgotten. But she stuck it out for 7 hours.
You know, the sad thing about it, she couldn't leave the car because she was given so many different...
Of course, times, every hour.
And I think the breakdown was, when I contacted Dublin, they didn't obviously know about Derry. I said, I'm in the fourth biggest city in Ireland.
Yeah, on the island.
And I'm on one of the main arteries going into the city at rush hour traffic. This is an urgency that we can... So there was a breakdown. So I have asked AA, and they said they would look into it. And I said, you may look into it, but I want a complete breakdown where, if you excuse the pun, where it all went wrong. Okay. And if it was to save somebody else, on how that anybody else get in that situation, how they would get out of it. I would be a lot wiser today.
Report back to us so we can see what lessons can be learned when they get back to you.
They did say they would come back today with me.
And this would happen more often than you would think, because it can be going into Derry, into Strabane, to Belfast, even just travelling through the north to Dublin. Nicholas, thank you so much for that.
Just on that, Greg, before you go, I says to one of the operators in Dublin, I says, if a car came out of Newry and broke down in Monaghan, I says, you would have to do it, because AA UK would have to contact AA Ireland.
For sure, yeah.
And they says, yes. And I said, well, how come it's so different the opposite way around? Now, when the two guys landed, when we had two trucks in, they were so, so professional. They got the job done as quick as possible, but I'm sure if they were stuck on traffic...
I just wonder...
I just wonder
on their computers, is Derry listed as Derry? And you're saying you're in Derry and someone's looking for Derry.
I did... Against my better
you dropped
judgment,
the album.
I did say after the third or fourth, I added another town to the front of it just to make sure I was in the right town.
All right, Nicholas, look after yourself. Thanks very much indeed. Glad it all got sorted in terms of getting the car picked up. But obviously, it'll be interesting to see what AA have to say. And it's time now for a big launch here on The Greg Hughes Show. It's Highland Radio's Customer Service of Awards for 2026. We can cross now to the beautiful Mount Errigal Hotel and join the radio station's CEO, Sean Quinn. Sean, it's that time of the year again. Good morning to you. How exciting.
Good morning, Greg. Yes, it's very exciting. I actually cannot believe that I'm standing here. It feels like it was only a couple of months ago that we were talking about the Customer Service Awards in 2025. But here we go. We're launching in the Mount Errigal for 2026, and we're delighted that the actual awards has gone from strength to strength. This will be our third year of the awards, and last year was probably the biggest. We were oversubscribed. We could have probably sold another 300 people in the room on the evening. But the people that were there and were lucky to be there, I think there was about 550 in total, Greg. They had an absolute ball. It's a great night. It's full of energy, and it's great to see businesses that are recognised for what is customer service, because it's key. It's a key component to every business and the success that they have. And these awards are so special because it's your customers that nominate you. It's not your friends, it's your customers. They get the opportunity to nominate a business, and whoever is shortlisted and lucky to be in the room, they're all winners. And I always say that they are winners.
Yeah, and that's no exaggeration or just a piecemeal line. That is the truth. And I think also through these awards, you're also going to see, you know, customer service right across the region up its game, because there's a focus on it that wasn't there before. And it's a positive focus in recognising good customer service. Sean, before we chat to a guest that you have with you, you talked about how this is the people, this is the customers. And, you know, unless I'd seen the figures for myself, you'd almost find it hard to believe. But in terms of, you know, nominations and votes throughout the whole process, the level of public interaction in this is really quite remarkable. We're talking tens of thousands of votes, and we're talking, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands of interactions on the posts and all that type of stuff. So this is huge in terms of a business getting themselves out there, getting the message out there, marketing themselves, but also taking a pat on the back.
Absolutely. And do you know, the key part here is being involved in this is great for every single brand, because you rightly said, the reach that we get on our social media, on our website alone, is into the hundreds and hundreds of thousands. But we introduced last year the voting, and that completely and utterly blew me away. So we normally would have about, I think it's between about 15 to 20,000 nominations. Now that's huge in its own, Greg. When we whittle that down to three or four in each category as shortlisted, we nearly had 90,000 votes last year. That's your customers that have voted for you. And I have a feeling, I have a good feeling, that we're going to hit the 100,000 this year, because people, they want to, I suppose businesses want to promote themselves, because being acknowledged as being shortlisted is a huge achievement. But people also want to get involved. So what I would say to everybody out there, if you see your favorite business out there, number one, let's nominate for them, not put a nomination in for them. It's very easy to do on highlandradio.com. And if they're lucky to be shortlisted, get out there and vote for them, because that's when it makes all the difference. And it also makes a brilliant night on the evening.
We have with us Conall McClune, who is Community Welfare Officer in Donegal with AirGrid. And Conall, you know, this is, as we've talked about, celebrating, encouraging, harnessing local businesses. An easy decision for AirGrid to come on board, and we're incredibly grateful, but it seems like a good match for the ethos of what you guys are doing too.
It is, Greg. Last year we were involved with one of the categories, and like, it was such a successful night. Even as Sean says, the enthusiasm was fantastic. Then we got the opportunity this year to come in as the main sponsor, which we were very glad to do so, and very happy to be involved in the night. Like I say, it was really promoting all the small businesses. Everybody's so community based, and it was an excellent night, in fairness, you know.
Yeah, and you know, no more than what we're trying to do here, you know, celebrate and encourage business. That's part of what AirGrid's at as well. You know, the recognition of the businesses, but the people behind them, hugely important.
Very important to us, Greg. Like, we're very much community-based, and like, that would drive us on as small businesses, and seeing what their needs are as well for ourselves going forward, and even getting speaking to people in small businesses, and like, they're the hub of the communities, Greg, you know, and it's nice to give them a bit of support.
Yeah, indeed. You said you were there last year, right? What are you looking forward to this year?
Much the same as last year. It was really good fun.
Just
everybody,
be honest, you're looking forward to finding that envelope under your chair and winning.
that wouldn't be bad either, now to tell you the truth. But no, it was a great night, now, in fairness.
No, Greg, I couldn't do that, could I?
I could think of some prizes. No, it'd be great. Listen, it is really wonderful to and I think, you know, the profile of the awards, it's mutually beneficial is what I'm saying. It's fantastic for us to have AirGrid on board, and I hope, and we are sure, it's good for AirGrid to be associated with Highland 2. Two big, strong brands, Conall.
Very much so, Greg, yeah. And like I say, even going running side by side with Highland and like, all that's going to go with it as well is very beneficial for both of you, you know.
OK, well, listen, we are going to take a very short break, if that's OK, and we're going to go back to the Mount Errigal Hotel. Conall, thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you on the night, by the way.
You too. Thank you, Greg.
We're in the midst of launching this year's Highland Radio Customer Service Awards 2026. Let me tell you, if you trust anything I say, if you haven't been to one of these nights, you haven't lived. They are fantastic, and the team have them down to a T. And this is all about getting you involved now. And we have spoken to Conall McClune, Community Welfare Officer in Donegal with AirGrid. It's amazing to have them on board. And now we go back to Sean, who has a guest with him. Good morning, Sean, again.
So we're joined now this morning by Breda Doherty of Hairdos in Churchill, who was one of the winners last year. And tell us, you know, and tell Greg, how did it feel to be a winner of the Customer Service Awards?
Ah, Sean, like, you couldn't explain the excitement and the thrill of winning your local awards. I think the night itself was just exceptional. It exceeded all our expectations. We've been to national awards before, and we've been lucky enough to win them, but I don't think anything hits the same as winning your local awards. And as I say, you succeed it yourselves with the exceptional night. I was texting my friends that are salon owners all over Donegal saying, you get yourself in for this next year and we'll have some hooli. It was absolutely brilliant.
Breeda, does it feel extra special when it's driven by your clients? Because I know you're in a very customer-focused business, right? And giving your clients the experience they come to know and love. Does it feel extra special sort of when it is they that have nominated you? It's they that are emailing or texting in or filling in the box on the internet. Does that make it feel all the more important?
There's definitely that element to it too, Greg, where there's the reality of the situation is that it's a pure competition and it's coming from the ground up and it's your clients have your back. They're not just coming in because you're good at your job, or they're not coming in just because they like where you're based. They're coming in because they actually like the whole atmosphere and they like the service you provide. And then when they get the opportunity to vote for you at the awards, they're more than happy to do it. And it costs nothing, as Sean said earlier on, like give your local business, give your favourite business that nomination. I'm sure Highland Radio gets a real thrill out of it when they see all them nominations coming through, as does the salon owners or the business owners that are actually lucky enough to win the awards.
Yeah, and it's the variety of the categories, you know, the size of the businesses from very small business, medium-sized to large business, and it's done in a way where it is a perfect level playing field. And who's to say that you don't retain the title? Maybe you still are the top salon in the county in terms of customer service awards. Two in a row sounds good, maybe.
Two in a row sounds brilliant. And I'll tell you what an award does. It actually drives you on to become better, because I think there's an expectation from, in particular, new clients that come because you won the award to provide a better, higher service than you ever did. So I would love to win 2 years in a row. I would love to be nominated after being in there last year. I said to the girls halfway through, the priority for us is getting back into this room next year because the atmosphere was electric and we absolutely loved it and it was an absolute bonus to win it. It felt really brilliant, Greg. I must say, there's nothing to beat your local awards and your local radio station for the publicity. And just anybody that's anyone should definitely get their nominations in for their local businesses and just give them a fair shot at it.
Yeah, then that's the key, you know, get them nominated. Because in this day and age, and it's understandable, you know, there's lots of draws on you and maybe it's donated to this. Or this is something actually you can do. It's free and it can have a real positive impact. And as I say, it gives people the recognition they deserve. And Sean, I suppose we should start really opening up the conversation, should we, onto the range of categories and really sort of talk about, it is about customer service, but sometimes, you know, paint more of a detailed picture for us in terms of, you know, who it's open to, etc.
Yeah, so we've got retail, with house and home, hair and beauty, and motor, along with lifestyle. So the great thing about these awards, Greg, you mentioned about being small businesses, large businesses, is right across the county. And we saw that last year. We had people from right across. There's people from as far as Ballyshannon, way up to Malinhead, who congregated into a room in the Mount Errigal and who sat and who actually networked with each other and got to know each other, who'd never, ever would have a chance to meet these people. So it's wide and varied. All the details are on our website, and we also want to recognise this morning the sponsors of each category. So this year we have iMotors, we have Hickey Kraken Langan, we have Tata Consultancy, and we also have two new sponsors, and we welcome them along. It's Gibson & Associates and also the City of Derry Airport. So we're delighted to have them on board. They don't know what's ahead of them, because it's going to be an absolute blast on the 27th of September. But in the meantime, the message is, it's open. Let's go and vote for your favourite business. And let's make this a night to remember. And hopefully we have multiple dual winners who retain their title. That was one of the best plugs I ever heard there, I have to say.
Yeah, well, it's a busy day in the salon on a Thursday, isn't it? It's the new Saturday. Right, so also, exactly, but also to what you can do. And I really encourage businesses to do this. You can go onto our website right now. and you can download a Nominate Us poster. So you simply click on the download on Nominate poster and stick it up on your window or what have you if you don't want to ask people directly. There are, as Sean mentioned, hair and beauty, house and home, motor, lifestyle and retail. But for an example, in terms of retail, there are lots of subcategories. So convenience store, online retailer, menswear retailer, ladies retailer. So really what I'm saying to you is if you're listening today, or indeed if you're the business or the customer, there and that business offers customer service, it engages with customers, then you will find a subcategory in house and home, home furnishing, tradesperson of the year. So in other words, you know, you can have a big kitchen supplier, but you could also have someone that fits your guttering and your soffit. In other words, what I'm trying to say to you is that the categories under the subheadings are broad. And in hair and beauty, the hair salon of the year, as we've been hearing, barber of the year, lash and brow technician, makeup artist of the year, nails, etc. So really, Sean, the point I'm saying is the headline categories are there, but there's such a broad array of categories under. Everyone can get nominated.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, Greg, because it's not in general, it's right across the board. And as I said, it gives that small little business in a little village the opportunity, as big an opportunity as anybody else, whether on the high street in Balbuffet or on the high street in Letterkenny. You can be here in the room. If you're a customer of a business that looks after you on a weekly basis, a daily basis, or occasionally, but they go above and beyond. Today is the day, or in the next couple of weeks, is to go on to HighlandRadio.com and nominate that business because they deserve it, and they'll be delighted to receive it. What I love is when we get, the hard bit is the shortlisting, but when we get there, the delight of people when they find out they've been shortlisted, we see it across social media, it goes bananas because they start then looking for votes, and we can see that ourselves because they tag Highland Radio into it.
Yeah.
So today is an important day. It's an opportunity for every business out there to get involved, your customers to get involved, that we can bring as many. We're limited. I'll say that right now. We've 550 seats is the maximum we can get. Probably could sell a lot more, Greg, if I'm honest. But 550 is the capacity. So we will look after as many people as we can, and every shortlist business will be in the room on that evening on the 27th.
Yeah, and the reality too is that, you know, we're going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of business nominated, and that is whittled down to a select few who are winners on the night, and that gives it its prestige. But as Sean quite rightly said, every business that's nominated is a winner. Everyone that gets into the room is a winner. And of course, the overall winners there are the businesses on the night. It's a short window. People have until August 28th, which is remarkably only about 15 days away. So the nomination process is open now. Go to the website, you'll see it. And get cracking, I think, Sean. Get nominating your business. Get calling out for your nominations.
Do it early. Don't forget to do it. And some people do it twice.
Yes, they do indeed. They do. Breeder, have you thought far enough ahead yet as to who you might wear on the night?
No, absolutely not, Greg. I am not counting my chickens before they're hatched on this one. I'll be delighted to be inside that door and I'll worry about what I'm going to wear at a later stage.
Sean, what about you then? I don't want to say
My stylist is working on it as we speak here. So, yeah, absolutely. I always work in advance, Greg. You know that.
Well, they won't have that done by the 28th of August. Thank God the awards night's not till the 27th of September.
It's only short trousers. I'll be all right.
Right. Okay. So, listen, there's two important dates. All nominations have to be made by Friday. The 28th of August is a very quick turnaround. Then we throw it open to the public vote. That is weighed by independent judges too. Sean, they're on board again this year.
Yeah, we will have, yes, Greg, and that's an important part of it as well, because now what we do is we split the public vote and the judges' vote. So there's a percentage of goes from the judge and also the public as well. So I think that's very important. It's a very fair and balanced way of doing it. And it's amazing how
close they are. And just to put people into, yeah, exactly. And It's just I want everyone to because this the thing about this was about fairness and so you can have a company that has a massive social media following versus a company that is equally as good at customer service that might not necessarily but possibly should have the same footprint, and the awards are designed whereby you know we see a great variety of winners and they're always the best on the night, Sean, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think the thing we love about it is independent. It's non-biased. It's not a Highland Radio decision. We actually have nothing to do with it. All we do is we build the template for people to be able to vote. And the rest is down to the general public and the judges. And I think that's what makes it so special on the evening as well, is that it's the people out there. And the addition of the voting has definitely made a big difference to the actual awards. Mm. And I'm glad we did it. And as I said, I think this year we're going to have over 100,000 in votes for an awards ceremony, which is quite unbelievable for the northwest of Ireland.
All right, Breda, is it straight back to Churchill or lunch on Sean and the team? Breakfast on lunch on Sean and the team? Which is it?
Straight back. 11:30 appointments.
We'll get her wee scone before she goes.
Go on. We'll let you get back. Thanks so much, Breda. And congratulations so on winning last year. Get onto the website now, Sean. That's the message.
That's the message, highlandradio.com, and get voting or nominating. Thanks so much, Greg.
All right, have a good day.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Clunky segue. I'm not concerned at all. Chris Ashmore, presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, what's coming up on the podcast today, or this week, in fact?
Yeah, well, the main focus of attention this week, I've been looking at a company called Niche Specialist Staffing Partners, or Niche SSP, as it's known. Now, essentially, it's a recruitment company. They're based here in Donegal, but they specialise in the recruitment of people in the United States in what they call the pre-construction sector.
Now, and is it for people to work within the United States?
Yes,
wow.
Very much so.
So you've got a Donegal-based business working with industry in America and connecting hirers with hirees.
Exactly. Prices, okay. Now, in America, they call them estimators. We'd refer them really as quantity surveyors. So the construction sector. Now, they have Gareth McGlynn from Inch Island. He runs a company co-founded with Kira, his wife from Derry. They've built it up over the years. Now, they've got a very specialist market here, hence the name Niche comes into play. They deal with the top 10% of big construction firms and people who are relocating big, big projects. So as he told me, like, for example, we hear a lot about data centers at the moment. So if you were building a data center, millions and millions of dollars, the people who are putting the figures together to see how much it's going to cost, it's such a big role. So this is how they have developed. They're based down in Bridgend, employing 9 people out there, continuing to expand. And we have a little clip here, and he just, Gareth McGlynn, outlines what the business is all about.
So Niche SSP is a family-run business, myself and my wife. So we help the largest construction companies in the US hire estimators or pre-construction managers. Now, that's what they'd be known as in North America, but we would know them as quantity surveyors. So we don't. A lot of people think that we move people from Europe and Australasia to the US, but we don't. We move people within the US.
Now, as the name suggests for the company, this is a niche market.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know much about it when we left Ireland for Perth in 2011. But we soon realised that there was a huge market, massive shortage of talent in North America. And we thought, you know what, if we can get into that market, we can own it, we can make a healthy business out of it. So put simply, we're headhunting. So we're headhunting through our brand, Niche SSP. We've been going since 2017. So we've got a good brand. We're well known in the US. We're the only specialist pre-construction and estimating recruitment firm in the US. So that, again, attracts clients and candidates to us. And then essentially we're like Cupid. We're matching up the best talent with the best companies.
And fans of the Candy Stripes might recognise his name.
Absolutely. Gareth McGlynn made more than 350 appearances for Derry City. He had 3 spells with them. He went abroad with Akira, went to Australia, went to New York, dabbled a little bit in different types of recruitment and then found this niche market. So the company is going very well, continuing to expand. They've won a number of awards recently, the Northwest Regional Winners and the National Enterprise Awards, and were indeed Enterprise Award winners overall here in Donegal in 2025.
Interesting and unassuming premises too, but so productive and growing. Interesting stuff. You also have Louise Parks on the show.
Yes, now she is the project manager at Atlantic Technology University for what's called the Green Accelerator Skills Programme. That's known as GRASPS. Now, what they're doing now, from September, a number of courses are going to be available. It's all about upskilling in the construction sector with an emphasis on green-related projects. We're seeing more energy efficiency in our construction methods. So it's to make sure that the people have the skills to cope with the changing nature of the construction industry as we have a greener society.
All right, let's hear a clip.
No, we don't have a clip from her.
All right, well, hear a clip.
We don't
then.
Hear it.
It's interesting what you're talking about there. I noticed the ESB is a big, it's not kind of in the same space. The ESB is a big push on at the moment to hire electricians to work in that space. Part of that, I suspect, is the graduates aren't necessarily up to where they need to be. So they're trying to take your more mature, experienced electrician who's sort of got a bit more life experience, a bit more resilience, retrain them to work in these areas because the output from our universities can be a little bit lacking in some of these spaces, and that's just the way it is. Right, Donegal Whiskey, the second edition. It sounds like a book, but it's not, is it? This is a booze.
No, people may be aware of the Ardra Distillery, which is the home of Sleeve League Distillers. Well, last year they launched their Donegal Single Malt. They've had the second it's made in big batches, so the second release of it took place last weekend. And just interesting little story behind it, because they're going back to their traditional ways. If you went a century ago, the whisky made in Donegal, there was a very peaty, distinct flavour off it. The barley was dried over burning turf and the whisky was made heavily peated. Things changed and that sort of tradition basically filtered out, and they are now reviving that. So great response to this, and another little Donegal success story.
And finally, I saw a headline from a survey this week, which I didn't fully understand. 9 in 10 consumers still use the phone for customer service despite rise of AI. Right, so 9 times out of 10, when you pick up the phone to engage with customer services with bigger companies, you are engaging with AI. So I thought that was
I think some of the headlines were hard to interpret them. Yes, this survey was carried out by the Customer Contact Management Association. 7 in 10 respondents said that when they're interacting with AI, they want to be told, first of all, that they're interacting with AI, because some people may not even realise that. 3 in 10 respondents, now this survey was over 1,000 people, they actually rated AI phone agents positively. I don't know what your experience is, Greg.
My experience is this. If it gets my problem resolved quickly, I don't care if it's a person or O's and dashes. Now, that sounds like I might be saying I don't care if lots of people lose their jobs. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I don't want to go through 5 or 6 different options. I think companies like insurance companies make it purposely difficult to get through, except if you want to buy a product and then they answer phone straight away. And you know what? It's funny, we've just been talking about the customer service awards, and the businesses that do the best for me is where you go in and, you know, you feel like if there's a problem you can go back, or if you ring them, they answer the phone and they try and help you. And that's customer service. And to be honest with you, it's great if it's a person, but if AI does that and does it effectively, well, I'm okay with that too. Yeah. You can't stop progress, Chris, if indeed it is progress.
And there's nothing more frustrating than being on looking for the answer to your query and you just feel you're going round and round in circles. And go to the website.
Yes, they don't understand, and good businesses do. Chris, the podcast is available now. Hundreds of episodes that are available for you on our website. but also too, you can get them on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. In those spaces, there's chapters and text as well too. It might suit you better. So there's many places that you can get them and listen to the back catalogue as well. This one in particular is going to be released today and is broadcast then on Sunday on the radio.
That's right, on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news, and you can contact me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Okay, good stuff. Thanks very much, Chris. Now that's where we leave it. Today's one of those days where listenership figures come out. We don't know what they're going to say, do we? Because they're embargoed, which is crazy. But anyway, it is what it is. But and then by the time they are released today and it comes to tomorrow, I don't feel like that it's still relevant, but it is, of course. But what I will say is, again, my suspicion is that this show has done really, really well. And I suspect also over the course of a year, the listenership has grown close to 5%. That will all be confirmed, I'm sure, when they're officially released. We want to say, me and Caroline and Shannon want to say thank you for that, by the way. In this day and age, with a population that is growing so significantly in Donegal, with the attention that social media has and all of those other spaces, the fact that our little old radio show here is growing listeners on an annual and quarterly basis, we are flabbergasted and we are so grateful and thank you. And there, I'm sure we'll be able to run through some official figures for you tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise you, Chris, to hear that, though, would it?
No, great and well done indeed, Greg.
If indeed that's the case, it's embargoed. We don't know. Maybe I'm presuming. I think it's going to be good.
You're a confident man.